And I tried Love to find Talk something Radio. Time, and I couldn't come across anything.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven.
Hello and welcome, everyone, to The Bible on Trial on this February 5, 2016. We are delighted that you have taken a few moments out of your busy day today to either listen to us live or download us from the Blog Talk Radio website. We encourage you to go to our chat room today. There are two links there. You can click on. Those links are to our WordPress website that includes our book, The Spirit of the Church, and loads and loads of good writing that Rick Sterling has done. We also have a link to our original website at spiritoftruthministry.net/S, T, M. Lots of good writing and information there as well. If you have a desire, you can call in, and our call-in number is 646-716-8390. You can also call in toll-free at 877-903-3193 and ask your questions or make your comments directly to us, and we will respond in kind. So let's have a quick prayer, and then we will get on with it. Father in heaven, thank you for the truth. Thank you that your name is truth. Thank you that who you are is the truth. And I pray, Father, that we will, through Jesus Christ and his words, come close to you today. I pray this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. I was telling Rick earlier today that I, and by the way, if you hear me coughing and hacking and wheezing, like Suzette. Well, actually, you know, I'm on some heart medication that's causing me to cough, and Rick is a heart specialist nurse, and he pointed out something, and it's probably true, and I hadn't considered it before, but I might actually get asthma from this. So I might be getting asthma from it, so I'll have to now maybe take steps to deal with that. In any case, I've been walking the dogs. Yesterday I walked the dogs for 3.1 miles, and during that time, it works out almost perfectly that I can listen to an entire program off of our website, the Blog Talk Radio website, the same website where you are listening right now. And you can go to our episodes page. You can go down, and every single one of our more than 750 programs dating back to the talk show days of 2006, you can listen to those. And I was listening yesterday to a May 24, 2013 program. It was brilliant from this standpoint that the laws that we are accountable for, most of those laws are legislative in nature. We very, very rarely think about common law. Now, I was thinking about this, Rick and Don and Suzette. And by the way, good morning to all of you. Have you ever heard of a common law marriage?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Common law marriages used to be very, well, but that used to be the way you did it.
Oh, yeah.
usually in small town America, maybe there was a pastor, maybe there wasn't. If it was a Catholic priest, let's say there was a Catholic church in town, somebody who was a Protestant wasn't going to go to a Catholic priest and get married. So they would just have a friend stand up and they would be married under common law. Our nation, the United States of America, was founded under common law. However, statutory law, legislative law, has taken over the preeminent position, and we no longer claim rights, and our rights under common law are being usurped. So, this program on May 24, 2013, goes in depth into what it means to deal with common law. Now, excuse me, I'm only bringing this up because we are coming up on we are in an election cycle. And everybody out there, both Democrat and Republican, conservative and liberal, are talking about law. They cite law. They say, we need to do this, and we need to do that, and we need to regulate this, and we need to regulate that. Those regulations and the things that all of these people want to do are based on Title III of the Constitution of the United States. They are legislated laws. They are statutes. And one of the things that came up on this program, and by the way, Dr. Rich was no longer with us at the time, but earlier, Dr. Rich cited several times Bouvier's 1857 tenets of common law, in that the common law is eternal. There is no beginning, there is no ending, it is eternal. All statutory law is defined specifically for a specific purpose and a specific time frame. And one of the things that Dr. Don, I think that you brought out something interesting on this program, you were talking about horse and buggies in relationship to automobiles. And there were many statutes on the books back then about automobiles going down the street and upsetting the horse and buggy and all that stuff. And now this does not apply. That statute no longer applies. It is dead. So when you listen to our program today and whatever Rick is bringing up, I want you to consider whose law it is that is being talked about. Who put forth the law that is being talked about? Because one of the things that came out, and Rick pointed it out again this morning, is that when Satan came to this earth, he did provide statutory law. He does provide statutory law for his kingdom. He cannot have anarchy. He cannot have people going off on their own, doing their own thing. He has to regulate it and control it.
Yep.
God controls his kingdom using his covenant, which is the Ten Commandments, and that is not statutory law. That is common law. So, just wanted to get that out. I think you'll have a very good time with that program. And by the way, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Suzette and Don and
Rick. Do we have
Rick.
Any listeners?
Well, I'm sure we do, but
none of them have dialed in.
None of them have dialed in yet.
Well, to start out, I think
the first thing we need to define is jurisdiction.
Hang on here.
Jurisdiction. Do you know what jurisdiction is? It is a word in it which sounds familiar. What a jurist or what jurist means. It's like with jury.
Yeah. Someone who makes
jurisprudence.
Jurisdiction is the area that is controlled by a governing body. I don't know if I'm getting this word for word what you would find in the dictionary. But it is the area over which a governing body has authority. When you are outside of a given jurisdiction, you are not in submission to or in abeyance to the governing body that rules over that specific jurisdiction.
And the boundary of the jurisdiction is legislated. It is defined by legislation. Not, it is legal. It may not be lawful, but it is legal.
And that it also gives us a difference of definition for a attorney at law and a lawyer. Well, an attorney at law and a lawyer has to do with the admiralty law or law of the sea and the common law or law of the land.
Which one is that? Attorney at law.
An attorney at law, I have to double check, but one of them is works with legislated law, which is law of the sea. And the other works with common law, which is law of the land.
So you know which one?
I don't know which one. Mm. I think a lawyer is common law, but I may be...
So common law is the same as law of the sea?
No. Common law is the law of the land. Admiralty law is law of the sea.
A lawyer is subject to the law of the land.
Okay, that's...
And that is because they are... Well, you've heard of the bar. And have you heard of crossing the bar?
Mm-hmm.
When a ship crosses the bar, it means that it goes out to sea. Okay. In courtrooms, you have a bar with a gate. In order to cross that bar as a legal representative, you have to be authorized by the state in which you practice to be able to do that before the court.
That's why you pass the bar.
That's why when you take the test,
an attorney at law.
Right. And so you move from admiralty law to the law of the land.
Anyway,
you pass the bar.
Do you wonder why you have to walk through a gate to get to the judge?
Mm-hmm. Wow, never thought of it like that.
Now, this is not a study to explain and define admiralty law and common law, But I do want you to understand that there are three different
systems.
Jurisdictions.
Right.
Three different jurisdictions. There is, of course, the law of the sea, admiralty law, and what that is that the captain of a ship on the high seas is not in any particular nation's jurisdiction. And so if something comes up on board ship that needs to be resolved, the captain is judge, jury, and executioner, so to speak.
There is nothing more powerful on, there is no being more powerful on this earth, not even the Queen of England, as a ship's captain in the open sea.
Wow.
Because he is the absolute ruler of that kingdom that is his ship.
And it doesn't matter whether they are evil or good.
That's right. And don't think that when you go on a cruise that you are protected by the laws of the sea, laws of the ship, where the ship is based. Once you have passed the 3-mile limit,
wow,
you are
under
the admiralty law of the captain, and that captain can do anything he wants to with you without repercussion.
Whoa. So how does the military ship fit into this?
That's exactly the same thing. So, military, same thing. The captain, now the captain is under military orders. That is a little bit different.
But if you're riding on a ship, he can still do to you what he wants.
He can do to you anything he wants without repercussion.
That's scary.
But. Let's say that you take that law of the sea and move it onto land. And you say, well, how can the law of the sea have any authority over the land? Well, that then is determined by the definition of sea and land. And like I've said before, it's like that famous idiotic statement made by a previous president that asked the deep question, what do you mean by is? Yeah, what define is. On this earth, there are three jurisdictions. There is land and sea and air. And there are governing bodies to govern all three. In the United States, the governing body that governs the air is called the FAA. The governing body that governs the land is, of course, those who reside on Capitol Hill. And the sea is governed by maritime. What is coming? What God has always had as his purpose with dealing with this world, the people on this world, was when he first created the nations, he told humankind two main things. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the whole earth, and be husbandmen of the earth. In other words, take care of the earth, the land, the sea, and the trees. Because the nations were not created with the knowledge of how to do that, they were given teachers. And the teachers were from the heavens. And they were sent here to this earth to teach humankind what they needed to know to comply with God's stated reason for creating them. The teachers determined to become the God of humankind, the gods, small g, of humankind, and taught them different ways which God had nothing to do with. What this necessitated was judgment. But God is always just. And as we may take a look at what God has done so far, in our own estimation, we may conclude that God is, that God's justness could be called into question if he were put on trial. This brings us back to jurisdiction. God created everything, and as creator, he has the title right of ownership. He owns everything. But ownership does not necessarily give one the right of rulership, authority. God owns the land, but he doesn't own the people who live on the land if they recognize another authority and serve another authority. Because God has given humankind the right to choose wrong as well as the right to choose what is right. And through the acquisition of information, humankind has the ability to choose right or wrong. Now, one would hope that people would choose right, because right is what is true. Right is just. Right is common law. Some
exactly
describe this as the golden rule.
We talked about that the other day too, you know, the do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I can think of only one instance when that wouldn't work, and that's if you're a masochist. But that's so
well
rare.
That goes along with cast your bread on the waters and
right. But if we understand the dynamic of the common law, if you have a neighbor that is, I had a neighbor over here just several years ago who walked across my, he was drunk and he walked across and said, I'm going to kill you. Well, I mean, he wasn't operating under common law. He was operating outside of common law, coming over to my property and threatening me.
But, of course, he wasn't at fault because he was drunk.
Well,
of course.
He eventually, he was also diabetic, and he eventually lost his life because he wouldn't stop drinking. Okay. But the fact is how if we only treat people the way they treat us, then the world is going to disintegrate via entropy, because a lot of people are not nice people. That's exactly what's happening. We have the dynamic now of people are saying, if you treat me, you know, they put it all on the other guy. Mm-hmm. If you treat me well, I will treat you well. If you treat me, yeah, see, we all go down to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
What I believe God wants from us is to treat people the way God will treat us. But this has to be lawful and not legal.
Because legal is legislated.
Legal is legislated.
And lawful is the common law.
And remember, and I, one of my very favorite authors made a statement, and I'll paraphrase it. It is impossible to legislate out of existence stupidity. You cannot legislate stupidity out of people.
No, you can't.
You can try all you want. But that legislation is of none effect, because the people who are stupid will never abide by it.
But what is stupid?
Willingly ignorant, being willingly ignorant of the facts.
The term used in many parts of the Bible is fool and foolish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're at the point where we're now ready to discuss jurisdiction. Most people, when asked if God rules everything, will respond with, well, duh. Of course he does.
That's right.
God is God. God is above all things. God rules all things.
Mm-hmm.
All jurisdictions. Well then, what does the evil one rule? What jurisdiction does the evil one have? Because he is called the ruler of this world. He is called by God, the ruler of this world. So does God rule this world and the evil one rule this world at the same time? Well, God is higher than the evil one, so God rules the evil one. Oh, so God is responsible for what the evil one does because God. The evil one takes orders from God.
Oh, that's scary.
There are some people who believe that.
Yes, very strongly.
And if God rules the world, then why has he been trying for so long to establish a kingdom of his own on this world?
I find it fascinating that I'm looking at a verse in Revelation, actually two verses, in the New American Standard Bible. And remember, we've talked about the editorial component of having a verse be in the wrong chapter, say, or connected with the thing. And in the King James, the last verse of Revelation 12:17, ends with, "And the dragon stood on the sands of the seashore." It's interesting that in the New American Standard Version, that is the first sentence of Revelation 13:1.
And that also is in the Jerusalem Bible.
Yes.
It is the first sentence of 13.
So this dragon stands on the seashore, and what is that dragon doing? Well, the verse continues, "Then I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his heads were blasphemous names." So here's the dragon standing on the seashore and calling out of the sea a beast that is subject to admiralty law, because that's the law of the sea, and the beast is calling it onto the land.
Well, the beast is built on the law of the sea.
Yes.
Which is the kingdom of Babylon, the kingdom of Medo-Persia, the kingdom of Greece, all three, the kingdom of Rome, all kingdoms of the earth
were built on
admiralty law. Now you say, well, that's not the case. Well,
they were all seafaring.
The one that really exemplified this and brought it into the quote-unquote modern era is the Catholic Church, the Vatican, the canon law. Canon law is the law of the sea. Canon law is not common law.
And this is why the beast that is this little horn in Daniel 7 feels it capable in itself of changing times and laws, because those laws do not match the law of the sea that this little horn is expressing.
Who is the ultimate authority of the law on earth? You say, Satan? Well, yes, but Satan doesn't work directly himself with the people of earth. He works through
an organization.
And God does the same thing. God works through his kingdom. Mm-hmm. The Pope is the captain of the ship.
The law of the sea.
No, the law of the sea on land.
And see, that's what this verse in Revelation 13:1 says. The dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. That's the land. And he calls this beast out of the sea onto the land.
Where does the second beast come from, by the way? The sea?
Comes up out of the earth, and that is found in Revelation 13:11. "Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and it had two horns like the lamb, and it spoke like the dragon." So who is this? It is the dragon.
It is Satan.
Right.
Who has two, you could say, human rulers, as does the lamb, who has two people who are the ultimate authority. Now, you say, well, isn't the lamb the ultimate authority? Well, what do you read about the lamb in Revelation? What you read about the lamb is that his involvement in what is going on during the Great Tribulation, which is the time of the judgment, seems to be through two witnesses, which are called two prophets or messengers.
Correct.
And the two witnesses are ultimately killed at the end, and then 3.5 days later are resurrected. So the two horns of the lamb would be the two witnesses, and the two horns of the beast that comes up out of the earth would be the two kings who sit at the same table and lie to each other.
King of the north, the king of the south.
King of the north and the king of the south, defined in Daniel 11.
Yes.
So, what we must understand, and this is really important, because I think once you have cleared up and understand the difference between ownership and jurisdiction or authority, then you can start to put the pieces together of what the judgment really is meant to accomplish and why God has not judged the world since the flood. Many are those who would think to sit in judgment on God, but they don't have all the facts and information. And let me tell you, if you think that you can judge God, the first thing you need to do is make sure you have all the facts in your information. Because if any one of the facts that you have is incorrect or invalid, and you think you're going to sit in judgment on God, I say you better think again. You know, I have heard those who say, you know, God told those Israelites to go into those cities and to kill every living human being, even the pregnant women, and kill their fetuses. And so they sit in judgment on God and say, I could never agree to worship or follow a God that would do that. What have you done? First of all, you don't have all the facts and evidence. But you think you do, and you jump to a conclusion. Were you there? Did you know what was going on? Where do you get your information?
And do you have any idea why God would ask Israel to do this?
Exactly. When God makes a statement that he did not bring Israel into the land of Canaan prior to the time that he purposed to bring them into the land, and he makes the statement, because the nations living in that land had not filled their cup. And what he means by that is, when the cup is full, there's no room for anything else to be poured into it. And therefore, they have reached the limit of mercy, so to speak, that is the limit of allowance of life. And when the cup is full, then judgment from God comes.
Oh, but Rick, we have heard countless times that God has said that we are to forgive and to free. In fact, we're to forgive even before we have been asked to forgive.
God has never, ever said to forgive anyone who doesn't ask for forgiveness.
I know that, but that's not the prevailing
thought
process.
Well, of course it's not, but does that make it true?
No, of course not. And see, if you are not asked to forgive someone. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you about that person who has, for instance, believes that you have wronged them or that you have... Look, if you have wronged someone, are you required under the common law to go to them and to ask forgiveness? If you have wronged them, of course you are, because that means that you have set the record straight, that you have owned up to your responsibility and acknowledged your culpability in this. But if somebody has done you wrong and they refuse to come to you to ask for forgiveness.
Well, more times than not, they say they didn't do it.
Yeah.
That, well, that's the whole point.
They deny it.
That's the point.
Even when all the face of all the evidence points to them as the guilty party, they still deny that they did it. Do you need to forgive them if they didn't do it?
No.
No. You only need to forgive them
if they did it
and
ask for forgiveness.
They admit that they did it and they ask for forgiveness. What really is troubling to me is that I see people who have been greatly wronged. I mean, a family member has been murdered. And they go, well, I forgive the person for murdering them, but I have such a hard time because I can't forget what they did, but I know I need to forgive them. No, you don't.
I agree.
God has never required you to forgive someone who has wronged you unless they ask for forgiveness. And we know that Peter famously says, how many times should I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Seven times?
And Jesus answered.
And most Christians say that Jesus told him, forgive him as many times as he asks.
Right. There is a limit to forgiveness.
Yes, there is.
He said not
70 times.
Not seven times, but 70 times seven. So in other words, 77s, not 1 7, but 77s. And people go, well, 70 times seven?
That's just
that's
a big number.
That's so many times that...
You just keep forgiving.
But when you understand the significance of 70, and I remember I talked, what was it, last week or the week before about numbers and how God doesn't use one number to represent a number, another number, and that a number is always representative of the quantity of that number. But God does use numbers in context with certain things. And 10 is a number used in the context of judgment. And you find 10 in many places. Now, 10 is 10. And so immediately I hear, oh, there's 10 bridesmaids. So what are you saying? There's only 10 people in the kingdom? The Son of God was clearly comparing. Remember, he says, at that time, the kingdom of the heavens could be compared to 10 bridesmaids. Well, what is the size of a wedding party? 7 million? I don't think so. But you could compare 7 million or 14 million to a bridal party, which usually consists of 6, 8, 10. So a bridal party of 10 would be in the context of a marriage, but you could compare the kingdom of the heavens to a bridal party. 10, I believe, is used because the 10 bridesmaids, that 10 is used in the context of judgment. Now, there's another number which is used in context, but is also a literal, and that is seven. There are seven spirits of God. The Spirit of God has seven eyes. So you could say seven qualities, seven characteristics of one spirit. But you see them as the seven spirits of God. The spirits of God are seven. When you understand about Elohim, and if you haven't read the article that I wrote on Elohim, I encourage you to go to the WordPress site, search Elohim, and read that article. What God did for Adam when he made the statement that here's this man all by himself, he needs a helper, so they made for him a helper. And where did they go? Did they just make another being out of the dust of the earth? No. They actually put Adam to sleep, did surgery, removed a rib, and from his rib made him a helper, a being that Adam called woman because she was taken out of man, and makes the statement, she's bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She and I are one, but we are two, but we are one. So there is the difference between what you have a literal and then what you have as used in the context of.
And apropos of that discussion, the words that are used in Genesis 1, 26 and 27 are not man and woman. It is male and female. Chapter 1, different words. Chapter 2, we see man and woman, not male and female. And then later we see wife and husband also. Two, and again, we're getting a narrower definition.
Well, and two become one.
Two become one, and that's the husband and wife.
So here is what, that there is a full cup, and the full cup, when the cup is full, it's time for judgment. And the full cup is used in the context of the combining of the number for judgment, or the number which infers judgment or is used in the context of judgment, which is 10, and the number which is used in the context of completeness, and that is 7. And you put the two numbers together and you get either 17 or 70. The Son of God told Peter, no, not 1 times 7, but 70 times 7. Do you know what 70 times 7 is?
490, and that goes to the 490-year period that God defined out of time for Israel to get its act together.
Now, on the restoration calendar, which is God's appointed calendar for judgment, hopefully you can understand. You've understand. We've talked about this in the past, but it's been kind of the distant past. So I do believe that there is a paper article on the WordPress site about this, and I do go into it a little bit on the grand plan. This limit of forgiveness is throughout, or I should say, is always seen in God's time for judgment. First, which interesting is, Noah. Do you remember reading that Noah was the 10th generation from Adam? And what did God do? Well, God makes a statement that all of humankind had reached a point where their only actions that came from their heart and their mind, their only actions were to do evil continually. There was no good. But then the statement is made from them that Noah was a righteous man in his generation, the generation which was to receive the judgments of God because their cup of iniquity was full. The only way to not receive the punishing judgments of God, if you are in that group, that cup is full, is to be informed of your condition and to change it. So in other words, ask for forgiveness from God, and guess what he will do? He will reduce the amount in the cup. For instance, do you remember the story of Jonah? God told Jonah that Nineveh had reached its limit of forgiveness. Its cup was full, but here's an interesting thing. God knew, God knows two things. He knows whether or not, if informed, this people will ask for forgiveness and change. He also knows that if informed, they will not ask for forgiveness because there's no propensity to goodness. God knew that if the people of Nineveh were informed of their condition and that he was about to pour out his judgments upon them, which would be like Sodom and Gomorrah, he knew that given that opportunity, as long as they were informed, well, who's going to inform them? Well, God said, here's Jonah. Jonah is a prophet of God. God told Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh and inform those in Nineveh that I am going to bring my judgments upon them because they have reached their limit of forgiveness. Well, Jonah didn't want to, but anyway, I'm not going to go into all of that. Jonah ultimately ends up in Nineveh. And he says what God has told him to say. In fact, he tells them they are all going to be destroyed. They've reached that limit. They're all going to be destroyed. And when he's finished, he goes up on the hillside and he overlooks Nineveh. He thought, well, I might get some entertainment out of this after all. But what had happened? A change had come on Nineveh from the king to the lowliest servant had all changed, had all asked for forgiveness, and had changed their ways. Did God destroy Nineveh? No, because they had asked God to forgive them. The king had even gotten in sackcloth and ashes and had declared that all the people would do this. When forgiveness is asked for honestly, God forgives. The world is in the same condition today as was the world in the days of Noah. And the time for judging the people, and what I mean about judging the people, is not holding a process of that will determine guilt or innocence. I'm talking about punitive judgments coming upon the earth as it was in the days of Noah when the floodwaters came and swept the people all away, and the only ones who survived were Noah and his family. But what is different this time? What is different this time is that God does have some people who are blameless, but he needs them to be innocent. What innocence is righteous. So he needs people to learn righteousness, to empty their cup of guilt completely, so that he can then seal them as righteous, and he can use them to get the rest of the world ready. Because what is different at this time is that there are people who are so in darkness, but if given the, if shown the light, they will accept the light and they will follow the light into righteousness, but there's just no light out there. God does not have representation out there. That is what he is doing right now. Now, we're about right around out of time, but tomorrow I want to continue this. We're going to talk about how God's plan is revealed through Revelation, that he is, what he's going to do is, the first group of people that he has prepared are, it's explained in Matthew chapter 24, 42 to 51, and then Matthew 25, 1 to 13, and then we go to Revelation. Because the book of Revelation is the explanation of what the judgment accomplishes. The book of Revelation starts out with how the kingdom is ultimately confirmed and completed, and that then the kingdom will get the bride ready, and that how the preparation of the bride and the process of judgment take place at the same time. And when the bride is fully prepared, the judgment ends and the punitive, the punishments come on those who chose lies, those who chose darkness, those who chose to obey the ruler of this world. And he will ultimately be defeated, just as he was defeated in the war in the heavens when he and his angels fought against Michael and his angels. He was defeated there, and he will be defeated here, and then the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord.
Thank you, Rick, and thank you, Suzette and Don. I encourage our listeners to go to our websites located at spiritoftruthministry.net and spiritoftruthministry.net/S, T, M. We will be on air tomorrow with the Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We encourage you also to go to our Blog Talk Radio episode page so you can download any of the past episodes that you wish to do. On behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis Neufeld saying so long for now, and we'll see you tomorrow.